This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we progress, looking a little bit more about the issues of the Black Knight satellite. Now, before we go on, Micah Hanks, I want to ask you here. If there is a breakaway civilization, and that civilization is a little bit more advanced than we are, wouldn't that explain certain technological mysteries, particularly around World War II and thereafter?
That's one interpretation. Yeah, I'm really fascinated with the idea of a breakaway civilization. I do think to an extent that there could be such a thing. I don't think perhaps quite to the extent that some of the UFO-related literature would espouse. I've got a lot of friends in the community who really think that that's what's going on, and tantalizing though that notion is, I'm not so sure that we necessarily have evidence for it. But I'll tell you what we do have evidence of. A couple of years ago, I was in London at the London Science Museum. And Beth Arzee and Maria Urdaneta and I were walking through the museum, and they had this great display all about the cosmonauts and the Russian space program. And they did talk about what was known as the mole, and they had reconstructions of portions of what was the manned orbital laboratory that they had utilized. At the time it was in service, of course, this was essentially a small scientific research station that orbited Earth, the Russians used, which was not, of course, publicly known, like our modern International Space Station. This is what I've always thought. If the Russians could have been doing something like that, and they had their own quote-unquote secret space program that wasn't quite like anything that you hear about in the books these days about breakaway civilizations, but nonetheless was similar enough to the kind of stuff you might have read in Moonraker or one of the James Bond novels, yeah, it only stands to reason that with our technology and our ambitions that the Americans have done things like that too. And yeah, some of this may have remained off the record. So I don't rule out that possibility that there have been technologies over the years that far exceed our own, and maybe that there have been instances where we have observed things that seem really weird that might otherwise be explained if we knew of the existence of those technologies, Gene.
What about a secret space program, the other theory that goes with it?
Yeah, you know, again, I think that would fall into what we're talking about because it seems highly unlikely to me. You know, coming back to the early 1950s reports of strange things that were orbiting Earth, I don't know that I could say that somebody had a space program or even a spacecraft and that someone was launching these up there. I mean, I do think that we would probably have more knowledge of that because to a certain point, you kind of get to the point where you have to ask the question, what would be the point of keeping all of this so secret and for so long? I mean, we've talked about going to the moon. Of course, we have the International Space Station. We have all this technology. Why would certain portions of the history of space travel be kept off the books because it's just considered too clandestine, too secret? But the Russians come out and they tell us about the manned orbital laboratory, a lot of the things that they were doing. As far as a secret space program, we can't rule out that there have been secret space technologies that either we in the Western world or in the East have utilized over the years. But I don't understand why certain aspects would be left out of the history books while others are included. That to me is just odd.
What bothers me about it also is, even if we had a secret space program that we were involved in, we have countries who really don't care about our best interests, and they would be only too happy to reveal something like this if they had evidence for it.
Yeah, and with all the hacking and stuff that's going on these days, I mean, one could you got to be careful talking about that, because I mean that strictly in relation to this conversation, Gene, but it's become a very politicized argument these days. Nonetheless, one would think, though, that if there were information like that that could be obtained, which would undermine U.S. agencies and their strategy over the years, I mean, we wouldn't have to be looking for recent data, which would be considered more sensitive. You'd think that hackers would be able to find all kinds of information going back decades that would reveal any sort of a secret space program or something like that. And again, I'm not going to tell the hackers, so to speak, to go out there and try and find this stuff. I'm just saying that in one way or another, you would think that if there were evidence for an ongoing secret along these lines, that that would have been revealed, unless, of course, and again, coming back to like a James Bond film kind of a theory, I was recently watching the film Spectre. If indeed there is, you know, some dark, nefarious organization that operates beyond the periphery of world governments and outside of the jurisdictions and the authority of the world governments, then perhaps it could be kept off the books. But, I mean, could a secret, that's the fundamental question, Gene, could that kind of a secret be that well kept and be maintained for so long?
Only if they had direct interaction with existing governments for some reason.
Yeah.
And made some kind of agreement.
It's interesting. You know, John Alexander, you've had him on the show. Sure. John is someone who has, for years, said, you know, I looked into this myself. You know, I went to the different branches of government. They are not interested in UFOs. I like John, but I also find that a little hard to believe. And I think that the reason why is because we have to take into consideration things like the very simple premise of need to know information. People would always say that, you know, on the first day of office, the president is sworn in, and then they tell him all about what happened at Roswell and who killed Kennedy. Well, I got to tell you, as my good friend Tiffany Mack often says, you know, the office of president is a temp position. Although we've laughed about that, really, if you think about it, it's true. I mean, you're in that office for 4 years or eight if you're reelected, unless you're FDR, which backed by popular demand. But again, I think that we have to look at this in terms of, are you really going to reveal to a temp position employee, so to speak, all the secrets of government? I do not doubt that for purposes of defense and intelligence and secrecy and guarding the great secrets that are indeed pivotal and of potential danger to the American public and citizens around the world, that certain information is not released publicly. And that, again, the highest levels of political office are also not in the know about all of that information. The question is, who has that kind of information? It's a very interesting but a very complex subject, which I do think that you have to take into consideration when you're looking at something like UFOs or just, you know, government in general, you know, secret societies, world powers, all this stuff. It would be naive to think that we have all of the data in front of us, all of the answers. And obviously someone does seem to have more than we do for reasons that perhaps we don't understand or are not meant to understand.
Also, I would think with the current administration, if they revealed something, the tweet would appear 5 seconds later.
Yes, that's right. It would be all over Twitter and then it would be done. Oh, that's good, Gene.
So I tend to think that they regard the president as the temporary occupant and they won't tell him anything unless he has the need to know. If there's no compelling reason, don't say it to anyone. Now, it may be possible that in the early days of the UFO mystery, in the days of Truman, in the days of Eisenhower, maybe they knew. But I think over the years, that became less and less so, assuming there was any secret knowledge to present.
I would agree. And I think that a lot of that, again, we might reference some of the historical work of Richard Dolan. It's funny because a friend and I were sitting and talking the other day, and he said, you know what frustrates me about some of Richard's books from, you know, with regard to the UFOs and the national security state? He says, He's documenting all this history, but he's not really giving opinions. And I'm thinking, well, wouldn't you think that's what a good historian would do? Not that you can't have opinions. I mean, I'm often criticized of the same thing. But sometimes when we approach ufology from a historical context, like what we're doing looking at the moonlit thing and the idea of, again, what I think really built onto a mythos that became the Black Knight satellite, I think that it's important to understand that you have to be able to document the fact. You can't go back and rewrite history. You can give opinions on it, but sometimes you have to state the facts and tell the story as it happened. So it's not that we aren't giving opinions, Richard Dolan or myself or whoever. It's that we're going back and we're kind of mining for this data and trying to put together the narrative in a non-sensational way so that the facts are what remain. And one thing I think that we can discern from that, and really why Richard has taken that approach with regard to UFOs in the national security state, is it shows that there is a sort of a political continuum with, if you want to call it UFOs or UFO technologies or whatever else, there is this political continuum with regard to technology. Or, of course, as Eisenhower warned, the industrial-military continuum or the military-industrial complex, as he referred to it, in which we see that, yes, maybe early on there were U.S. presidents who really were, often with their background in military, commander-in-chief, and they had access to this sensitive information. But as time has gone on, I think that the acquisition and the keeping of that information by the military bodies rather than the political leaders, that divide, I think, has grown. And with the, you know, compounding of that with the intelligence community, of course, and the digitization of surveillance and things in recent years, what we have seen is we've seen an intelligence and military branch of government that operates almost autonomously apart from the political decision making. And I think that if there are indeed UFO secrets that anyone keeps, terrestrial, extraterrestrial, you know, transdimensional, whatever else, it would be kept in that upper echelon of, again, what Eisenhower warned about, that military-industrial complex,
Let's go into more of this in our next segment with Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. And use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Why be held hostage by your wireless carrier for 2 years? What if there were no contracts, no activation fees, no tracking, tracing, or draconian gimmicks? All on America's largest 4G LTE networks? Introducing PixWireless.com. Activate your Sprint, AT&T, and unlock GSM phones instantly. Bring your own device and make the switch today. Here's how. Call or click 1-866-205-9513 or PixWireless.com, spelled P-I-X, PixWireless.com.
Attention small business owners. Want to save money on your employee health insurance plan? Learn the little-known solution that could save thousands of dollars on your health insurance benefits and save your employees money, too. Call Health Markets for a free consultation, and one of our 3,000 local agents will show you how to make healthcare reform work for you. We'll design customized solutions for your business that can lower healthcare costs for you and your employees. We'll work directly with you to determine your needs. We search thousands of health plans from over 180 health insurance companies nationwide. You'll also find out if tax credits could save you money. Best of all, the service is free of charge. See why Health Markets has enrolled Americans in more than 2 million insurance policies. You don't have to wait for open enrollment to lower your cost. Call now. Find out how much you and your employees could be saving.
Representatives are standing by to assist you. Call 800-930-5137. That's 800-930-5137. 800-930-5137.
Taking turmeric is good, but there's a problem with it. The active ingredient in turmeric, known as curcumin, is poorly absorbed into the cells due to its large particle size. But now, One Planet Nutrition has the answer for this powerful anti-inflammatory. Nanocurcumin, a nanoparticle curcumin which absorbs over 40 times better into your bloodstream. Discover more health benefits of nanocurcumin and nanocurcumin plus, now on sale at oneplanetnutrition.com. Use promo code GCN for your special discount at oneplanetnutrition.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Continuing with Micah Hanks, we started with mystery satellites, moonlets, black night satellites, what the governments of Earth may know about the secret. But if you're dealing with the military-industrial complex, if you funnel this off into private industry, so there's no government connection except for maybe a few high muckety-mucks. That's a way to give them plausible deniability. We don't know anything about it. We have no UFO project. We know nothing about it except that there was no evidence that UFOs represent a national security threat because private industry took it over.
Right. I think that a good case can be made that, again, outsourcing to private industry and private agencies over the years has allowed not only for that plausible deniability, but, I mean, sometimes there are much simpler methods of keeping people from asking too many questions that are employed. Recent example, for instance, FBI has now said that they will no longer be accepting, except for in rare circumstances, email queries for Freedom of Information Act. Here it is, the 21st century, and they're saying you have to either use snail mail or fax machines. Does anyone still have a fax machine? Please contact me if you do, because I'm going to need that to be able to file my FOIAs.
Well, I do have an electronic fax system. I pay just a few dollars a month, which is cheaper than having a separate fax line.
Right.
And it's an e-fax. And it's not the one most of you know about. It's a lot cheaper than that one. But that way, I have the same fax number I've had for 20 years or 25 years. And I could receive faxes. It doesn't happen very often. It happens often enough to need it. But, yeah, it's strange why they would insist on doing something there with a technology that no one really needs.
Well, but, Gene, I mean, I don't think it's that weird. I think it's pretty obvious why they would do that. What they're hoping, I don't think they're trying to cover up information. I think what they are trying to do, as other agencies already do, by the way, I mean, I think they're following in the footsteps of the CIA and other agencies that really operate very similarly. What they're hoping to do is limit the number of FOIA requests that are incoming so that they can kind of weed out all but the serious ones, the people who are willing to go to the trouble of working through snail mail or using fax. But what that naturally is also going to do is it's going to reduce transparency because the ease of access is thus limited. And I think that that is really fundamentally a problem with government today that we face. With all of the technology afforded us, you would think that it would be easier for them to just be able to put up information and not have to pay money for the paper and whatnot. They can utilize the bandwidth instead, and they can just communicate digitally almost on an exclusive level. Backpedaling like this obviously is intended to try and reduce the number of queries. And while that might be seen as something that's beneficial or practical, it does, I think, definitely present some issue in terms of transparency. And that, I think, in terms of modern American culture and society, is a problem that we have to face and take seriously.
So here it's discouraging people from trying to get that information. And then even when you do make an application for it, send a request in the normal way, the way that's prescribed, they can always come back and say, well, the information is not clear enough. The query is not clear enough. You've got to change three words. And if you figure out what those three words are, maybe we will accommodate your request.
Right. Yeah. It was put to me by a friend in aerospace a few years back. I wanted to try and begin inquiring about some of these large triangular UFOs, the big black triangles, as people call them. And under Bob Bigelow, although there's certain controversy associated with some of that, his National Institute for Discovery Science did some really good research into those back in the early to mid-2000s before they disbanded. And I thought, well, I'll just try filing some FOIA requests. And a friend of mine with a lot more background with this sort of thing than I have told me you'd have a hard time trying to get any information about these technologies via FOIA because, you know, Micah, you're not going to be able to just file a request and say, tell me about the triangle craft. You have to be so specific, and you have to be able to have relevant terminology. And what's really frustrating is friends of mine who've worked in government for years have said things like, you know, we know of certain documents that have actually been released. They're no longer classified, but for them to be released to the public, you'd still have to be able to utilize very specific terminology and know what to ask for to be able to obtain those documents. So it's very frustrating. They're actually free for release if you know what to ask for, but how do you know what to ask for if you don't know what the actual terminology that refers to what you may be looking for? Let's say, you know, exotic kind of aircraft or something like that. If you don't know what specifically to ask for, how are you ever going to get those documents?
And if you do know, and you do use the right terminology, they can say, see, we told you it's available. You just have to ask for it. Now, I wanted to go back to something we talked about earlier, very briefly. You brought up Nikola Tesla. And he's often connected with mystery science and mystical things. And you did raise a topic here, and I wanted to follow up on it because it's just something that seemed curious to me. Nikola Tesla and his communication with aliens, how so? When?
Well, again, this would have been around the turn of the last century, 1899 into the 1900s. He was observing, or monitoring, we might say, radio transmissions that came from space. and what Tesla had said on a number of occasions. He had kind of posited that maybe he was intercepting transmissions, radio communications from alien species. That turned out not to be the case. But the reason I bring that up in the context of this argument, first of all, let's just say that Tesla has remained a mystery because of the associations he may have had with various things, you know, ranging from a death ray. There have been people who have theorized he may have been responsible for the Tunguska blast of 1908. I don't think that's likely, but that's something that we explored recently on the Gralian Report podcast.
Let me just erase something that just hit me when you said that. Death rays.
Yeah.
There was a movie back in the 1930s that you might see online somewhere with Bela Lugosi playing this mad scientist who develops kind of a death ray, the invisible ray. And I wondered here, you know what? Maybe this was loosely based on the stories about Tesla.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, you know, his influence in culture has been, very profound, even though he was really kind of given the short end of the stick in terms of, the payout and the treatment of Tesla and his inventions. And, of course, at the time that he died, I mean, of course, there have been numerous FOIA requests to the FBI dating back to the 50s looking for information about what Tesla's lost archives, may have entailed. And I've gone to the FBI's website and read some of those and have never been able to find anything more than what we already know is that, he had interest in a number of very unusual things, which, yes, included the idea that alien communication might be achieved in the future. Now, he wasn't right about what he was monitoring, but what does all this have to do with this conversation? What's interesting is that the proponents of the modern idea of this Black Knight satellite gene, they look at what Tesla was doing around the turn of the century, 1899 or so. And they were like, what if he was picking up radio signals? Brilliant inventor, and forward thinker that he was. What if he was picking up on something? And that was the earliest evidence we had of an ongoing phenomena, which we began to see the continuation of in the 1950s with these mystery satellites and things. And there were other things, too, that were showing up over the years. We had in the 1920s, I think it was right around 1927, but the experiments took place in 28, between two Scandinavian researchers, Carl Stormer and a geophysicist, or he was a geophysicist, his associate, Balthasar von der Pol, great name, was a physicist, and he worked with the Philips Research Labs. And they were investigating a really weird phenomena, which to this day, this is one of these genuine unexplainables. I'm sure there is an explanation for it, but we don't know what causes it. It's called long echo delays.
Let's talk about more of this. And go back to Nikola Tesla and that movie. I did a search for the movie The Invisible Ray, and I'll tell you something there that's interesting. We've got more to come with Micah Hanks and Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Why be held hostage by your wireless carrier for 2 years? What if there were no contracts, no activation fees, no tracking, tracing, or draconian gimmicks, all on America's largest 4G LTE networks? Introducing PixWireless.com. Activate your Sprint, AT&T, and unlock GSM phones instantly. Bring your own device and make the switch today. Here's how. Call or click 1-866-205-9513 or PixWireless.com, spelled P-I-X, PixWireless.com.
Being self-reliant is about being prepared and to do what you need to have your own source of renewable energy. Portable Solar LLC offers the most powerful EMP-hardened solar system on the market that is transportable from place to place, and the best part, it's very affordable. Contact them at PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875. Sol Arc EMP-hardened solar generator energy insurance for your family or business. Call Portable Solar LLC today or go to PortableSolarLLC.com to check out their patent-pending technology.
This is a life-changing message for anyone with sleep apnea who is on the go and tired of dragging around a big, bulky home CPAP device. Now there's finally a portable device that's as small as a soda can and weighs less than a pound. You can even add a battery that's as tiny as a deck of cards. It's the Transcend Mini CPAP, and if you're one of the first 100 callers, you can try Transcend risk-free for 10 days. So call now, 1-800-441-0405. Transcend is the world's first portable mini CPAP device. It gives you the freedom to sleep in total comfort anywhere you are. Our smallest and most advanced portable design ever, Transcend is so small and so light, You can fit it in your briefcase or purse to use anywhere you go. It's FAA compliant too, so you can even sleep comfortably while flying. To guarantee your 10-day in-home trial, you must be one of the first 100 callers to call MiniCPAP.com now. 1-800-441-0405. Again, that's 1-800-441-0405.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
By the way, in case you're wondering what happened to Chris O'Brien, he's certainly feeling okay. He's recovered pretty nicely from his recent hospital visit. What happened, though, is he ran off to do a special assignment and has run really, really late. So he will not be on this episode, but he will be with us for After the Paracast, a special feature from the Paracast Plus. Let me remind you, the best way, the number one numeral uno best way for you out there, neighbors, to support the Paracast is to become a subscriber to the Paracast Plus. Go to plus, P-L-U-S dot theparacast.com, plus dot theparacast.com. We offer a commercial-free version of this show, the After the Paracast podcast, and more for a low fee, weekly, monthly, annual, etc., etc., plus dot theparacast.com. Now, I briefly mentioned connection with Nikola Tesla, a movie that came out in 1936 called The Invisible Ray, and it starred Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, a few of their pairings. And I was looking at this old photo of Tesla where he has the mustache. And the character that Boris Karloff plays in this movie has a mustache. Don't know if there is any resemblance. But what it says here is a scientist becomes murderous after discovering and being exposed to the radiation of a powerful new element called Radium X. It's interesting how movies like that are inspired by possible real events. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go on, please.
I would find it hard to believe, in fact, that somehow Tesla had not influenced those kind of science fiction films. And again, you know, as it relates to the moonlit mystery, Black Knight satellite, there have been those theorists who have said, well, you know, Tesla, he may have been monitoring these radio emissions. That's really all that Tesla has to do with all of this. But I will add to that that, again, Tesla's influence being as profound as it is has led to a lot of speculation about whether he might even be in some way in, or I don't know that we could say he is involved, but it could be that certain inventions that Tesla had envisioned for the future had predicted certain UFO technologies or perhaps even influenced them. Now, I wish I had more knowledge about that. The problem is I've gone back and dug through every kind of back catalog edition of Electrical Engineer magazine, or I'm sorry, it was Electrical Experimenter magazine, Popular Science, looking for every, and a lot of them are available, if not all of them, online, but scanning through all these old PDF issues and reading the actual text of these articles, I try to find these anecdotal statements that Tesla alleged, he was alleged to have made, where he talked about cylindrical craft and aircraft that would require, he scoffed at what was taking place at Kitty Hawk out there, the Wright brothers and all that. He said, in the future, that's going to be seen as a very, very limited mode of air travel. The aircraft of the future that I envision will be a tubular device that can just lift off straight off the ground and go straight up, and it can travel at incredible speeds and come to an abrupt halt. And, really some fascinating stuff that does seem to describe later UFOs, these flying cigar-shaped UFOs. But I dig through these magazines, and that's what's so disappointing, is it's so difficult to find the actual quotes. And this is a phenomenon unto itself. Quotes that are misappropriated to historical figures, presidents, inventors like Tesla, you find this kind of a thing. And at the end of the day, you'll find that so many websites continue to use these sometimes completely fabricated quotes that seem to tie together a number of mysteries. And I think that really, in large part, that's kind of what has happened with the Black Knight satellite. They see Tesla sitting there reading his newspaper in the morning, monitoring what he believed in the 1890s were alien transmissions from another planet. In likelihood, they weren't. I mean, they were probably radio emissions from natural sources right here within our solar system. But then we come forward to Carl Stormer, who I mentioned at the very end of the last segment, and his associate Vanderpol. And they were studying these long-delayed echoes. What would happen is they'd send a radio signal, and then sometimes as much as like 14, 15 seconds later, they would get the message coming back to them in an echo, a very long-delayed echo. There are a lot of theories, and I've written articles about this myself, a lot of theories that try to explain this, but by far the most novel of them, Gene, really didn't come to light until about 1973, I believe. There was a Scottish science writer named Duncan Lunan, and he published a paper that and it was actually published in an academic journal, and he wasn't exactly a ufologist. I mean, he was known as a science writer, but Lunan suggested that these long-delayed echoes were in fact due to an alien probe that might be monitoring Earth. And he later kind of retracted some of his theories, but what he had essentially said was, if there's some sort of a probe up there, they may be receiving our signals, and they may, as a form of communication or some other mechanism, sending these things back, and the transmission versus the processing time and then the receipt of the echoed message, this could account for some sort of an object that's up there observing the Earth. And he was very serious about this. I mean, he really thought this might be a thing. He was also criticized for that and later retracted some of the statements. But this is really where I think things began to come together, because people were like, hold on. Now, Tesla was monitoring stuff back in, the 1890s. And then in the 20s, we had our Scandinavian friends out there who are receiving these long-delayed echoes. And now we've got Duncan Lunan who's looking at this. And, of course, you tie all that together with the objects that were being observed by Tombaugh and others in the 1950s. Well, could it be that maybe there is a alien probe circling the Earth? And you add to that the modern NASA photographs that seem to show these weird objects out there floating around, which generally this is where we have our best evidence of the so-called Black Knight satellite. And sure enough, people have said, over the years, with the accumulation of this information, there is something up there. There's actually something that's been monitoring us. And somewhere along the way, Gene, this idea that it's a 13,000-year-old satellite that was placed by extraterrestrials came together as well. I became fascinated with trying to understand how did all of this lead to this very clear narrative about this alien vessel that was placed in Earth orbit. And it's a very odd phenomena in itself, because the best I can discern, we can determine that with the photographs, the NASA photos released, which, of course, this is what's funny. People will tell you, they're not going to show you anything real. They're going to airbrush everything out of the photos. And yet it's the very same photos NASA releases that people who are the advocates will go to, and they'll look for these so-called Black Knight satellites or whatever else in the photos that are supposed to be airbrushed by NASA. again, it's very convenient that when people want to spot something, they'll find it. And if they can't find what they're looking for, they'll say that, well, because NASA airbrushes it. The object that's often referred to in the NASA photographs available online over the last few years, usually probably photos that were taken from one of the STS missions, it's probably actually what's called a thermal blanket or a heat blanket that was drifting apart from the space shuttle. Or in some recent instances, they're probably similar situations where debris may have been photographed from the space station, whatever else. Again, speaking with aerospace experts, I've had time and time again people look at the objects that are pointed out by theorists as the Black Knight satellite, and I'll say, you know, can you identify this? And they say, yeah, I mean, I'll tell you exactly what that looks like. The further problem is that those who are more skeptical, those who I guess we might say are conspiracy-minded, and I think, you know, again, many who listen to this show probably are, and I am to a degree too, so I'm not trying to marginalize them, but I'm going to say that there are certain people who, if any person in authority says, no, we know what that is. I mean, that's a heat blanket. I mean, look, you know, here's this, this, and this. We tend to be very critical of opinions given to us from officialdom because, well, of course, but that's what they want us to believe, right? Which further compounds the problem.
I think the officials sometimes encourage that impression. We don't believe the government anymore. I often said that if Obama, during his presidency, trotted out E.T. and said, okay, we are going to admit now that we've been visited by extraterrestrials, and here is E.T., and they're going to communicate with you, most people would think it's an actor made up. People would not believe what he says, and I think that's true with any recent government leader. George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, I don't know, but certainly Bush, Obama, and Trump be the same thing. We've got more to come, talking about weird things out there, and more, with Micah Hanks of the Gralian Report. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features. And most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine Tablets, 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.
Lifetime Grazed 100% grass-fed beef has the health benefits you seek. When compared to conventional beef, it offers good fats while virtually eliminating the bad. That's the result of cattle who never eat grain, ever. Rich in antioxidants, including vitamin E, C, beta-carotene, and CLA. No artificial hormones, antibiotics, or other drugs. For all our fresh, non-cooked products with only 100% grass-fed beef, go to MidasResources.com. Use voucher code GCN to get 30% off your order. MidasResources.com or find us on Facebook.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
As As a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision and independence to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. It's the leading cause of blindness in adults 55 and older. Some of us are at greater risk for AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD. If left untreated, it can lead to blindness. The good news? With early detection, AMD can be managed with effective clinically approved treatments that can reduce or even reverse some vision loss. Learning that you have AMD can be scary, but there's hope and help. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is researching and developing treatments and cures for AMD. To get your free AMD information packet, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. Join the fight against AMD, because together there is a cure in sight.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Hi, this is Joshua P. Warren, author of The Poor Man's Paranormal, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
An entertaining discussion looking at interesting mysteries. What's going on out there? What's happening? What does the government know about it? Are we being visited by E.T.? Is it something left here from an old civilization? And that's an interesting thing here. Say we did have something that was put into orbit 13,000 years ago. Would it be necessarily from an alien civilization or an advanced civilization on Earth that no longer exists?
Gene, you could take it one step further and you could say, what if, in order to monitor the rate of progression of humans since ancient times, we from the future travel back and we put the thing there ourselves, 13,000 years prior to the present, but we may not actually get to the point technologically where we have the device in question for another, 5,000 years. And so we travel back and we put it there. I mean, again, this, you can see where the conversation very gradually begins to trickle over into, I think, science fiction, but I also think that sometimes a little abstract thinking can be good for the mind and certainly good for the soul. And I'll also point out a little Fortean tie-in here. Going back to June 1961, I'm a collector of old magazines and things, and I've got a lot of great old fate magazines, some of which have been given to me by Phyllis Galdi, but also some that I've collected and inherited from people over the years. And in the June 1961 issue, there was a pretty neat article about these mystery satellites that had been written by Harlan Wilson. 1961 is an interesting year because that was the same year, of course, that we had a young astronomer with the French Space Committee named Jacques Vallée. He'd been among the staff, and he'd observed an unusual retrograde satellite, he and a number of the other staff members. And they were really excited by it, and they thought that it was, again, they actually thought this might be an asteroid that had entered Earth's gravitational pull and somehow had been able to enter an orbit rather than coming crashing down. And he was amazed when he saw his superiors take the tape and they basically, whacked it, as they would say. And this is part of what got Vallée interested in UFOs to begin with. But he in likelihood observed one of these things, too. So that same year, there was an article in Fate magazine in June by Harlan Wilson. And he had talked about, again, these various appearances of this, what was often referred to as a retrograde satellite. I'll tell you this. I suspect, in fact, there's satellite orbital data and also launch records available online. I think spacetracker.org is one website that we've used to look for this kind of thing in the past. But it seems pretty evident that probably it was an early rocket launch that failed, which caused one of the apparatus to actually enter a retrograde orbit. And I think that right around the 1960-1961 period, and Time magazine even reported on this, and I can find the quotes here someplace, but I'm pretty sure that the retrograde object that was seen around that time was one of ours. And what's funny is digging into that initial mystery and, frankly, trying to find out what it was that Vallée may have seen back in 61, That's what kind of turned me on to these earlier reports, which prior to that I didn't know existed. So Harlan Wilson wrote about him in Fate magazine that year, and he quoted a Stanford-based Australian radio astronomer named Ronald H. Bracewell. And Bracewell said something very interesting, which, again, I think also may have contributed to that later supposition that, hey, what if we had an alien probe up there? And he said, and I quote, if a superior civilization really wanted to pick up signals, it would do much better to send an interstellar probe to the vicinity of a star being investigated. Such a civilization would even send a spray of probes, maybe aimed at 1,000 likely stars. The probes would be programmed to rebroadcast any radio transmission they might hear. So for all we know, what Bracewell had to say there may have even influenced Duncan Lunan in the 1970s, and certainly the ongoing mythos of the Black Knight satellite that continues today.
There you go. But how does any of this at all circle back to the UFO mystery, or does it? Or are these all red herrings that just kind of showed up?
Well, that would be my opinion, I think, Gene, that, again, you know, I try to be careful about, you know, saying inconclusively now we can explain this, because as you and I well know, I think there are a lot of people who identify as the UFO debunkers, where they will unravel something and they will find a more likely narrative, which I think maybe as it relates to the mystery moonlets, you know, we kind of outlined that. We've looked at some of the science, we've looked at some of the history, and we've looked at the way that speculation is built onto the modern Black Knight satellite notion. What does it have to do with UFOs? I think the problem is that people will often build these speculative narratives, and then they'll say, and therefore aliens, you know, or they will use this speculation to inform what they think the likely possibilities are as it relates to UFO phenomena. I see often the same kind of thing happening with abduction. People will describe abduction experiences which may or may not have anything to do with a actual landed UFO craft. I mean, people claim that they're visited in their bedrooms by light beings and all these kinds of things, and I've been told these stories by people over the years. The point is not to try and say that they're all crazy by any means. The point is to say, but what does that necessarily have to do with UFOs? And you begin to see over the years that there are a lot of things that I think that very, you know, very committed researchers like Kehoe, they were very serious about what they did and what they were trying to learn, but I think that unfortunately, by not being careful enough with the information, certain data becomes ingrained within the ufological mythos, but it may not necessarily have anything to do with it. I think that the moonlets are a mystery nonetheless and remain as such. And again, I mean, we've got a lot of little near-Earth asteroids that actually have entered an orbit around Earth of some kind. We've 3753 Kruthnae. We had another one that was titled 2002 AA29, and more recently, I mentioned in April of last year, 2016 HO3 was an asteroid. Again, it's way too far out there to actually be a moon because it shares an orbit with the sun, but technically it also does orbit Earth, and thereby it is a moonlet. We now know that these things exist. That, to me, is a fascinating mystery, but it's not necessarily one that is ufological. I think that by studying these things and really trying to understand what they are and why they're different from UFOs, what that does is it's like chipping away the excess stone to reveal the statue beneath. Eventually, I think there's going to be a statue of ufology we may be able to understand, but we've got to chip away the excess stone first.
Well, it's certainly interesting to look at all these side mysteries that occurred with the UFO field. I mean, in different ways, there were all sorts of theories in the 50s that UFOs were not necessarily from other star systems, but planets in our own solar system. And as we learned more about what happens in our own solar system, those theories fell by the wayside. So instead of having flying saucers from Mars, for example, well, maybe it's possible that it was colonized by individuals, beings from other star systems. They went to Mars, they went to the moon, they set up bases, and they visit us. But there are no longer the possibility that we have native ET on those planets. That really changed. I mean, Kehoe in his early days was talking about the Martian canals even.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that Tesla also had suspected maybe that those radio transmissions he was monitoring, if alien, I think he even Tesla had, again, it wasn't unusual to hear that kind of thing in the late 19th century. But yeah, he certainly thought that maybe Mars was somehow connected with all of that.
Yeah, that's how things have changed. So much so that we no longer quite think of that in that sense, our theories about UFOs. Do you think, though, And this takes us to the overall architecture here of our discussion. With all these little side mysteries, have we learned anything more about UFOs since the 1950s? What do we know that's different?
Well, you know, Ruppelt, at the end of his book, which, again, I recommend everybody read if you really want to understand, I think, that very era, in fact, where these kind of mystery satellites were being observed. And this was from a guy who was really at the forefront of really digging into this because the Air Force had put him in charge of it. Well, there's also that conspiracy theory, Gene, that Project Blue Book was just kind of like a puppet agency and that the real architects of Blue Book had been the CIA. I think that APRO, you know, Jim and Carl Lorenzen had put forward that idea that the CIA were really the ones behind the UFO study group all along and that, you know, Project Blue Book was a red herring altogether. I still think we got some pretty good data from Project Blue Book. The problem is that in the years that followed toward the end of the program, it became increasingly evident that the Blue Book, the researchers and the research that was being carried out seemed to be aimed at discrediting and playing down UFOs. I think they began to get really bored with it and tired of spending taxpayer money on it. And then the Colorado University UFO project was the final nail in the coffin, so to speak. But again, have we learned anything? Ruppelt had said at the end of his book, you know, I'm confident that in the coming years we'll have an answer to the UFO phenomena, and yet we don't. And so the modern skeptic mind looks at this and says, well, we have no answers, and therefore there's nothing to see here. And then the hopeful believer says, well, but of course there's something to see here. How can you possibly ignore it? Now, the problem is I think that either of these attitudes can be fairly ideological. I like to advocate a certain centrism when it comes to looking at this subject and trying to understand UFOs because, you know, as soon as you become ideological, somebody asked me, they said, you know, what do you think is the best way to be a modern skeptic?
Let's continue with this, and Micah Hanks. More to come with Gene and Micah. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
We use cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24-7. Call 800-261-0937. That's